Fugitive. A QM production. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
That show sounds pretty good. I might watch that myself sometime. Hi, everybody. Welcome once again, another edition of Talkin' Fugitive on KSAV, an in-depth discussion of the one of the greatest dramas on ever on television. If you want to participate in tonight's discussion, you can do so on the phone, 800-407-KSAV. You can do it by email, and there's two ways to contact the expanding list of hosts for this program. If you want the email to be seen during the broadcast, talk, T-A-L-K, at ksav.org. Any other time you want to send a message to the host, fugitive, at ksav.org. Okay, here they are, and it's a celebrity-studded group, too. Four, we have moderators for the Fugitive Discussion Group. That we have, they are hosts on a highly successful radio talk show on KSAV, and now best-selling authors, Bob and Kitty and Ken, and it's only a half-hour show, or I would give you their whole rundown. So let's get serious here talking Fugitive. Bobby Neer, you want to start off?
Oh, sure. We're probably going to have to start our own network after a while. Yeah, we're here to do the third of four consecutive programs on Landscape with Running Figures. And we are now at part two. And when we left off last time, Richard Kimball and Marie Girard were in a truck headed for the nearest town named Tilden, where supposedly she's going to get some medical care. I have a problem, personally, with this part of the story, because I think that Richard Kimball is making a big mistake by leaving the scene of the bus crash and taking her to Tilden. I see no reason for it. She's not grievously injured. She is temporarily blind, and he's already decided that she's going to get her sight back. She's not in a coma. She doesn't appear to be in any great danger, and there's flooding in the area, so that I think this is another really bad decision by him in this episode. That he had no business leaving and going to a town where he didn't know what was going on. For all he knew, there was places going to be flooded, so I think that was very stupid. But we have to have him go and do this, or we have no story. So he takes off with her in a truck that they literally steal, although we know he never does anything like that. He actually does it here. Somebody takes a truck and takes off with her for this town. And they're not on the road for more than, I don't know, for a couple of minutes, but according to the story we're watching, where there's already a very sexy, very shapely blonde standing in the middle of the road who is flagging them down. She seems quite frantic. And since we know that Richard Kimball never pays attention to any beautiful women that he sees, even though they throw themselves at his feet, he stops the truck because he simply can't keep his nose out of everybody's business. And this always causes trouble. He should simply ride by because he supposedly has a badly injured woman with him. He has no business stopping, but he stops anyway to find out. And she gives him some sort of hokey story about how she needs help. Gets out of the truck, and it turns out that it's just a lie, that she's got two young men with her, and they're out to steal whatever they can steal. Namely, they need a tire. They have a flat tire, and they need a tire, and they intend to take Kimball off the truck. For all of the help he gives them, he simply gets a lug wrench to the back. He gets injured. And Marie gets terrorized in the truck by one of these criminal types. And these three that have become known as the landscape looters, because they play a pivotal part in the first two acts of part two. Had they simply disappeared here after this incident, that would have been just a stop along the way. But instead, we see them in town once they get there. I never dreamed when I first started watching this that this would be controversial. It didn't bother me that the looters, these potential looters, as they will become later, are in the story. I could have lived with them or without them, but on our message board, a lot of people don't like it, a lot of people hold it against the story, and my two co-hosts actually deducted points off this story in the viewer poll because these looters were in the story. So, I don't have a problem with it, but they do. Kitty and Ken, what say you about the landscape looters? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Well, for me, it's definitely a thumbs down because it's basically, to me, rehashing something that we've seen before in other episodes. You know, these people that they encounter, from my perspective, are no different than the punks that Richard Kimball encountered in Angels Travel Lonely Roads when he was with the sister, you know, and they were terrorized on the road by these punks. Mercifully, that ended relatively quick in that storyline, so it didn't really detract from it. You know, but then, you know, we had the cliche, you know, the beautiful blonde flagging him down. We saw something very similar in the episode where Kimball got roped into helping a kidnapped kid. It all started with a frantic blonde chasing him down and saying, "You have to come help me." We also saw, you know, these kids also, I thought, would have fit in quite well with all those obnoxious kids in the episode Fun and Games and Party Favors. So for me, it just really wasn't that original. Marie Gerard gets reduced to this classic damsel in distress that we saw in See Hollywood and Die, where Brenda Vaccaro is the guest star in that episode, and she gets terrorized by one of the robbers that take her and Kimball hostage. And, you know, and as I watched this episode, I thought, you know, we had a really good setup in part one, and this was the best the writer could come up in part two, just rehash a bunch of old plots.
I agree with you, Kitty. Part one, on the message board, I gave it a 10 rating. And especially the end of part one, you have the bus crash, and then you have Marie, she's on the stretcher, and she's crying for help, and you have that excellent scene. Kimball is going to walk away, but he turns his head and decides to help her. And they get into the truck, and then part one ends. And as a fan, I go, great, I can't wait for part two. What's going to happen? Now he's with Marie Gerard. This is brilliant writing by Anthony Wilson. He got them together. What is going to happen in part two? And Kitty, I agree with you. These landscape looters just ruin everything as far as the beginning of the episode. I thought it was a complete waste of time.
Yeah, and that was how I felt, too, that it was that they wasted the entire first 30 minutes of the show. I mean,
right. Here
it is. We were supposed to see, from my perspective, I looked at it and I was expecting to see a show about Kimball and Marie Gerard, and it just digressed into where these looters became the focus of the story. And I just thought that it was very unfortunate because it took away from potential scenes that you could have had. I mean, I thought, is this the best the writer could come up with?
Did the truck tire fit on their car?
Apparently it did because they did eventually end up in the town of Tilden where they had a second confrontation with them. And that was where the one psychotic guy once again started terrorizing Marie Gerard. I mean, I don't know if he wanted to sexually assault her or just terrorize her or what the deal was, but Kimball was a real idiot, I thought, as well, in that act, because he actually went in to try to ask the looters to give them some help. I mean, here it is, he got hit, what was it, as Bob, you pointed out, that he got hit with like a tire iron,
and he thinks
that they're actually going to help take Marie to a hospital to get her some medical attention.
Okay, well, let's take the episode scene by scene rather than skipping all over the place, because it doesn't make any sense if you do it that way. I just want to say one thing, and that is the fact that the looters don't particularly bother me, and I'm sure both of you saw my post on the board a few weeks ago. And you have read in The Fugitive Recaptured where Ed Robertson tells a story about how Anthony Wilson had handed in this script, and it was perfect, and they loved it, and they claimed that it was one that didn't need any rewrites or anything. It was great the way it was.
Yeah,
but
well,
it was 25 pages too long. So essentially, he'd written a story that was an hour and a half long, and the show was only an hour. His original script, and I haven't seen it, none of us have seen it, his original script apparently did not contain the looters because it was a one-hour story. It was a one-part story. I would love to see that script. I don't know how he did it in 1 hour, but apparently he did.
Well, so it probably would have been better.
Well, yeah, but they say, the producers say, there were 25 pages too long for them to fit in one part. So they gave him an option. They said, we're either going to take out 25 pages, or we'll add 30 pages, you write it, and we'll make it a two-part story. Now, I'll grant you this. This kind of stuff always looks like filler when you do it, and we see it all the time in TV shows. I see countless TV shows where I could say, that 15 minutes was a waste of time. All you're doing is trying to get to the top of the hour. That's all you care about. You see that everywhere. I can name them show on one hand a number of times I haven't seen that. So he had an option. It was going to be one way or the other. Now, without seeing the script, I can't really say what it would have looked like, you know, but I mean, there's a lot happening in part one. So obviously, you've got to go into a part two. So he had to create something in order to fill in that time. And that's why I cut him slack on that, because I don't think he really had any choice. He wrote a brilliant script, but if the producers say to you, your script is too long, something's got to give here, either take something, what are you going to take out of part one? Everybody loved part one. We loved every single scene in part one. Many of us gave it a 10 plus, and I can't think of anything that I would take out of it without wrecking it. Plus, you can't get to the end of the story. So you have to do a part two. It's very easy to sit here like you two do and simply say, that's a waste of time. They shouldn't have done it. But you got to come up with something different. Remember.
But you know, Bob, we've got to add this blonde girl to our list of dysfunctional fugitive women.
Well,
she was absolutely awful. Don't you agree?
Well, she's just an idiot.
I don't know that you could even call her dysfunctional. She was more of just your genuine airhead.
Well,
I mean, we didn't know enough about her to consider her dysfunctional.
She's just eye candy. She's just there to look sexy.
Exactly.
She's just there to sway back and forth. She's got a radio up to her ear. She's wearing very tight clothing, and she's giving Kimball a look. I mean, that's what that's all about. Her purpose, she has no purpose in the story.
Why does Kimball stop the truck and try to help these people?
Well, I can't
figure it out.
Because he can't keep his nose out of everybody's business.
Yeah, that's a gimme. Kimball can't help but stop and help whoever needs help. That's just
Do you really believe that Marie Girard is injured enough to take off in a flood area to try to get help? I don't see it.
But you know what I did like, you know, after that, you know, the looters, they jump Kimball, and then we feel sorry for Kimball, and they get back in the truck. What I did like was the scene driving into Tilden. Now that was a very, very good scene, and they show the water tank, and then they run out of gas, and then how about that scene where Kimball grabs Marie, you know, and get out of the truck,
right?
And he really puts a nice hug on her, and they walk down. That was very good, I thought.
Well, I like that scene because I made a screen cap of it where they're walking into town, and you see them from behind, and the entire deserted town is in front of them. They're at the top of the street, and in front of them is a completely deserted town.
Yeah.
And it's overwhelming because you know at that point that there's no help here. In other words, he went for nothing. There's nobody in that town. And it's an interesting shot. I agree that all of those parts are done very well. Here's the problem. Here's the issue here. If you're going to take the looters out, the looters are either not on the road at all, or they're there and it's an incident and it goes by, like Kitty mentioned in Angels Travel and Lonely Roads. It's just an incident along the way. They did not come back later. You're now facing about, I guess, the fugitive runs about 50 minutes after commercials. So you're facing about 45 minutes to fill in that part, too. Now, when we get to our next show and we talk about the Kimball and Marie talking in the bar, that's a very compelling scene, of course, but I'm not sure it can run for 50 minutes. There's got to be some conflict in the town. And I thought it was interesting. Didn't you think it was interesting that there's a flood in the area, but the flood never reaches Tilden? This is dry as a bone.
Would that have been an exciting scene
if there had been some flooding, too?
Exactly. I mean, you know, when you think about what else they could have done, instead of having Kimball save her from some psycho thugs, you know, how about having some real danger in the town from the flood?
All right, we're going to take a quick time out. I could see this already where, like,
he could be taking Marie Gerard in on a rowboat, and then the looters could stop him and steal the oar or something.
They would do
well,
the day on TV.
We're going to take a quick time out. We'll come back for more serious discussion. 800-407-KSAB if you want to join in. We'll be right back on Retro Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past. All the memories you cherish will last. Listen and you'll agree, it's the place you wanna be. It's KSAV. Never far away, at work or at play. Hear the sounds that you love every day. We play the sounds of today and yesterday. So stay with KSAV. Whether on the go or in your home, you'll hear songs of yesterday. KSAV will be with you to warm the day in every way. So share the music of KSAV. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be for songs that fill the day. It's KSAV. Stay with KSAV.
KSAV is the home here of Talk and Fugitive. Say, on the alternating weeks, when the Fugitive takes the well-deserved respite, we have the grab bag, and I'll give you a little hint. Next week, 6 o'clock Pacific time, is going to be part two of Riding the Rails with transportation correspondent Jim Gronke. That was the very first production that KSAV did when it first started up, and is well done. Part one was last week, so tune in next week for 6 to 6:30 on Tuesday. That's p.m. Pacific time, and here Riding the Rails. Okay, we're riding here something else, a real spree on Talking Fugitive. So let's get back to the good stuff.
Okay, well, okay, we realize now that I'm being outvoted here, as I was outvoted on the message board regarding the looters. But when you watch a fiction story or you read a novel, you're at the mercy of the writer. He does what he wants to do, and you're kind of stuck with it, whether you like it or not. You don't have any options to change it. So we know the looters are in the story now. The question is, now that they're in there, are they used effectively at all? And I think to some degree they are in one of the scenes. But before I get there, and Kitty's already touched on this, I thought it was completely asinine for Kimball to take Marie into the phone exchange, sit her in front of the switchboard, tell her to try to reach an operator. That's fine. I have no problem with that. She's got nothing else to do. And then he goes outside, and he still seems to be obsessed with this idea that he's got to get her to a doctor, even though she seems perfectly okay, and that he is a doctor. So I don't know what he has to do here. And he goes, and he sees that the looters are in town. He looks up the street. He sees their car. And as Kitty has already mentioned, he goes and tries to get help from them. This seems completely idiotic to me because they've already hit him in the back. So you really want to go tangle with these guys again? I don't think so.
Well,
this
seems
like a waste of time.
Well, when you consider that here it is, he's a doctor, and obviously this woman is showing no signs of slipping into a coma, and when you consider the fact that way back in the first season he managed to perform a C-section out in the middle of the woods, and
yeah,
emerged from the tent without so much as one drop of blood on himself.
Oh,
and you're telling
leave him alone on that, will you?
And you're telling me that he can't help this woman, you know, with her concussion and blindness when she doesn't appear to be that bad off?
Well,
yeah, you know, what is missing in the first 30 minutes of this episode, part two, is where is Philip Gerard? I mean, he was so crucial in part one, and then they neglected him, you know, and he's just...
Well, not later on.
Yeah, but in the first part,
yeah,
you know, he's just at the police station, and
right,
he's doing absolutely nothing. So you're talking about an angle to the story. I would have, you know, kind of got Philip Gerard involved a little bit. And
okay,
also with Marie, you know, the acting of Barbara Rush here is outstanding. You know, we're talking about when they walk into town after running out of gas. And I'm looking at the computer right now, and I'm looking at the screen caps, you know, and the way she's clutching the Kimball.
Right.
And let me ask you guys, why is she so trusting of Steve Carver here?
Well, what choice does she have?
She's holding on to him, and she doesn't know who this guy is.
Huh? Well, what would you do if you were blind all of a sudden?
A little odd.
Would you hold on to anybody?
It's odd that she would be so willing to get into a car with somebody, because when the bus broke down like it did, got into that accident, I mean, you had to know it was only a matter of time before help would arrive. I mean, in fact, help arrived, it's established that help arrived and got those other people out of there before anybody ever got to Kimball and Marie. So she actually would have been better off to just stay there with the bus. And
well, the real problem is that she's hysterical over everything. Everything that happens, she jumps, she starts crying and screaming. And look, she's in a lot of trouble. And I think that, you know, she's all of a sudden blind. That just seems to me to be something that would be just very terrifying for anybody to go through. But before we run out of time, I just want to mention one thing. Talk about the looters. Okay, we could have lived without them. I'll grant you, there's all kinds of options. I mean, you can almost anywhere if you take them out of the story. You can assert a lot of things in there, and that can be said about every story you ever watch. You can come up with other things you can do. But I really like the scene when one of the looters, who's with the name of Bevo, decides to go ahead and... well, first of all, I wanted to mention that Kimball goes up to visit the looters. They're in the bar now. They're actually looting. They're looting the bar up the street. And Kimball goes in there, and when he's asked by the blonde where she is, he tells them where she is, and he says, oh, she's down in the phone exchange trying to reach help. You talk about stupid. I mean, you really want to tell them this with Bevo standing in the background, and what does he do? As soon as he hears it, he goes down there to terrorize her. Now, that's a very good scene. I like that scene down there. It's a very terrifying scene, and it's done in kind of an understated way. You know, she's in there. She's alone. She doesn't know whether Kimball's there or not. But as any blind person, you know, she's using her other senses. She realizes that there's somebody in the room, and it's Bevo. It's this other idiot looter who's in there, and he's making noises. He's whistling through his teeth. He starts throwing books at her because he's some sort of psycho who's into watching people get terrified. And this is Kimball's fault. I mean, there's no way in the world that he should have gone down there and told anybody where she is. That was just completely absurd to do that. So that's another mistake. I think Kimball makes more mistakes than anybody else in this story, and he makes a lot of them right here. Gets her in a lot of jeopardy. I know, Kitty, that you had mentioned in your review that he went down there to sexually assault her, but I never viewed it that way. It doesn't look that way to me in this particular incident. He's not down there. I mean, if he went down there to rape her, she'd have been dead, because Kimball's way up the street, and he's completely out of it, and he's being threatened with that lug wrench again, and he's not even close. I mean, Bevo goes down there basically because he has a lot of fun watching people get scared, and that's what he's down there to do. So I would hate to lose that scene. And if you don't have the looters come back, you don't have that scene. And I don't know that I personally can come up with anything better than that. It's a very scary scene. Ken mentioned Barbara Rush. She does a great job here, don't you think, in looking terrified.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, maybe they could have done it, but just in a different way. I mean, you know, you brought up at one point on the board that it seemed odd that everybody in that town would be gone, because it's a well-known fact that not everybody leaves when there's disaster impending. I mean, just look at the hurricane. At places where hurricanes hit, you always have people.
Since you brought it up, I have a question for you. Why are there no cars anywhere in town, anywhere? There's a single car in town. Nothing.
Well, you know, and as I said in my review, I thought when they first drove up to the town, it actually reminded me of a scene out of, this would be something you'd notice on the, you'd see on the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. Well, they're probably using an old set from the Twilight Zone when they're there, so.
It could very well be. And, you know, why not, instead of having these predictable, you know, coming up with these predictable looters, how about they meet maybe some people when they get to the town, you know, not necessarily some punk thugs, but you know, maybe I don't know, you know, you find all kinds of people in towns when people evacuate, maybe somebody who's a little eccentric or something. But this was just all too much of the cliches that we've seen in past episodes.
Yeah, you know, the first 30 minutes of part 2, I'll have to be honest with you guys, I was disappointed. I really was. I said, I wanted a different angle to the story. That's just me. You know, I wanted a real classic story right here, and I felt that first 30 minutes kind of dragged. And you mentioned Bob, the looter, coming back into the bar, and then, you know, one of the punks is harassing Marie there, and, you know, bothering her. That scene kind of flat for me. And did you notice? I think she screams, right? And then Kimball comes to the rescue, and I said, "Oh no, here we go, the big white knight coming to the rescue again." You know, I mean, I have seen that. What do we got? 70 episodes?
This is 70, yeah.
I've seen Kimball as the White Knight maybe 35 times now.
And we will again, yeah, sure.
Don't give me that again, please.
Well, can I tell you what my fantasy ending is for this, or my fantasy scene is in this first movie? If you're going to take out the looters, this is going to sound ridiculous, but this is what I think they should have done. They go into Tilden, and there's no looters, there's nobody around at all. There's just floodwaters. I mean, there's supposed to be a flood in the area. It's too dry. It doesn't look right. So there should have been a flood there, and eventually Gerard shows up in town, and there's this great scene between the three of them in which Gerard must decide at one moment, everybody's in danger of drowning, Gerard must decide who to save. He either saves Kimball or his wife.
Well, now that could have been good.
That would have been classic.
Yeah. I think it would have been very well done, you know, and at least Marie wouldn't have had good cause to want to throw him out of the house at the end of the show.
Yeah, but you got to leave the restaurant scene, because that is one of the best scenes in the entire series. I know we'll get to that next time in 2 weeks, but that restaurant scene between Marie and Kimball,
of course,
is outstanding.
Yeah, the only problem is I think that as it stands, because it runs for about two acts, that's why it's good. I don't want to dilute it by making it all about them. I'm not sure you can keep interest from viewers if you start part two with no other conflict in town. It's just the two of them. That's asking a lot. I mean, I like that kind of stuff, but not everybody does.
But that's where you add Gerard, Philip Gerard. You got to get him.
Well, sure. In other words, you want him in town.
I want him coming, looking for his wife, but he doesn't know that Kimball's there. And also, I want Marie to set a trap for Kimball. She's gonna get him, not Philip. Marie's gonna get him. That's what I wanted.
Well, listen, I like those. We had a lot of alternate scenarios put on the message board. I thought were great, and that's one of the things. Like I said earlier, when you have fiction, you know, you put it all in the hands of the writer, and you don't. I mean, we've all read books where it was fascinating all the way through, and you get to the end of it, and you go, "Is that it? That's the ending? That's what they gave me?" I sat here and I read this all this time, and this is how it ends. So you kind of take that risk, but I think there are a lot of ways to go. It just struck me as very strange that they did not use the flooding angle. You know, that would have cost a lot of money to create a flood and do all that. But the Fugitive was well known for spending a lot of money for doing things that other series weren't doing. So I think that they would have been up to that kind of thing. So the looters, you know, I think the position in the end is that we could have lived without them, but I'm personally not bothered.
All right, well, the end is upon us, at least for 2 weeks. You're going to be back with the discussion of what the final episode of,
right,
of this in 2 weeks. Those of you that would like to listen to Talking Fugitive on the archive, it's available now for both broadband and dial-up connections. So go to the KSAV archive page, and you'll see the link on that. Later on tonight, my favorite program, Talking Television with Dave White, will be on, featuring the Munsters. So stick around. Coming up next is Susan McCrae, then Perfectly Frank, then Talking Television, and we will see these three celebrity hosts here in 2 weeks, right?
Right.
All right. We'll talk to you then. The rest of you be here as well on Sheravision Radio.